Welcome to our deep dive today. It's all about thinking and acting locally, and we're looking at this through the lens of economist and author Tom Woods.
Tom Woods, yeah, he's quite a figure. You know, he received the Hayek Lifetime Achievement Award back in 2019 in Vienna, and he's also the author of 13 books.
Wow, 13 books?
Yeah, and some of them have become New York Times bestsellers, like The Politically Incorrect Guide to American History and Meltdown.
So where are we focusing our attention today?
I mean, he's made some of his work available for free on a site called tomsfreebooks.com.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. And specifically, we'll be looking at excerpts from his ebook, The Pentagon Versus the Economy.
Okay. So what are we going to be uncovering in this deep dive?
We're going to be exploring the often hidden costs of military spending.
Okay.
And how those costs actually directly impact your life at the local level.
Okay. So our listeners should be prepared to be surprised at the connection between these massive military budgets and their everyday life.
Yes. Get ready for some surprising connections between those massive military budgets you hear about and the things you experience every single day.
Like what? Give me an example.
Like the price of your morning coffee.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
Okay, now I'm intrigued. Let's unpack this. A good place to start, I think, is with this idea of the seen and the unseen consequences of economic decisions.
Yeah, that's a great point. You know, it's a fundamental economic concept that helps us see the bigger picture.
Hmm.
The idea was actually made famous by a 19th century French economist named Frédéric Bastiat.
Okay.
And he illustrated this brilliantly. With what we now call the broken window fallacy.
The broken window fallacy.
Yes.
Okay, that sounds intriguing. Tell me more.
Well, Bastiat used this analogy of a shopkeeper whose window gets smashed.
Mm-hmm.
On the surface, it seems like a good thing for the economy because now the shopkeeper has to hire a glazier to fix the window.
Creates work for the glazier, right?
Right. So there's an immediate benefit, a job created.
Yeah.
What's the fallacy? Well, the fallacy lies in what we don't see. See, the shopkeeper now has to spend money on repairs that he could have used for something else.
Okay.
Like buying new inventory or investing in his business.
Right.
So that money is now gone.
It's a missed opportunity.
Yeah, it's a missed opportunity. He's worse off than before.
I see. So we often focus on the immediate visible benefits, like jobs created by military spending, without considering the unseen costs, the opportunities lost.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Economist Seymour Melman had a term for this.
Okay.
He called it parasitic growth.
Parasitic growth.
Yeah. It refers to economic activity that actually depletes resources without really improving living standards or contributing to future production. Excessive military spending, he argued, fits this definition perfectly.
Parasitic growth. That's a powerful way to put it.
Yeah.
So how does this connect to our everyday lives?
Well, think about it this way. The Department of Defense, they spent so much between 1947 and 1987 that it could have doubled the American capital stock.
Double the American capital stock. That's staggering. What does that even mean in practical terms?
It means we could have had twice as many factories, businesses, infrastructure.
Oh, wow.
All the things that contribute to a thriving economy.
Right.
And a higher standard of living. That's the opportunity costs we're talking about.
Yeah.
And this is just one example.
Wow. That really puts things into perspective. So we're essentially sacrificing potential growth and development by pouring so many resources into the military.
Mm-hmm. And it's not just about the sheer amount of money.
Okay.
There's also the issue of what economists call a brain drain.
Brain drain.
Yeah. The military sector often attracts, you know, the brightest minds with high salaries.
Makes sense.
Leaving civilian industries struggling to compete for that talent.
Yeah. If you're a brilliant scientist or engineer, you might be drawn to cutting edge military research, even if it means your talents aren't being used to solve problems that could directly benefit people in your community.
Precisely. It's another unseen cost.
Another missed opportunity.
Yeah. We could be seeing incredible innovations in healthcare, education, sustainable energy, you name it.
Right.
If those brilliant minds were focused on those areas instead.
It's like we're diverting our best and brightest away from solving the problems that we face right here at home.
And then there's the issue of how the Pentagon actually spends the money it gets.
Okay.
The procurement process, the way they buy things,
mm-hmm.
often leads to, well, you could call it distorted markets. Instead of prioritizing efficiency and getting the best value for taxpayer dollars,
right.
the system seems to incentivize something else entirely.
What do you mean?
Cost maximization instead of cost minimization.
Okay.
Let me give you a concrete example. The C-130J prop plane.
Okay, I'm listening. What happened with that plane?
Well, it was so poorly designed that none of the 50 purchased by the Air Force were ever put into service. They were
Well,
essentially useless.
they didn't even work.
Yet Lockheed, the company that manufactured them, was
Yeah.
still paid 99% of the contract price.
Hold on. They got paid almost the full amount for planes that didn't even work. How is that possible?
Well, it highlights a systemic problem. The military procurement process, it often prioritizes contractor profits.
Over functionality.
Yeah, over actual functionality and accountability.
Wow.
And this is just one example.
It sounds like there are countless others.
There are countless others.
So it's not just about wasted money. It's about a system that seems to reward inefficiency and a lack of accountability. That's incredibly frustrating.
It's a symptom of a much deeper issue, and we're just scratching the surface here.
Right.
But it gives you a glimpse into how the system operates
Yeah.
and why understanding these unseen costs is so important.
This is really making me rethink how I view military spending. I never considered these kinds of consequences before.
And we're just getting started. There are even more layers to this, more tactics that are used to secure funding for military projects, even when those projects are questionable, to say the least. We'll dive into those next.
Okay, so we've been talking about the unseen costs of military spending, the opportunities lost when resources are diverted to the military. I'm starting to see how this connects to thinking and acting locally, but I'd love to explore that connection more deeply.
Absolutely. Earlier, we were discussing how that military spending from 1947 to 1987 could have doubled the American capital stock.
Right.
Let's imagine for a moment what our communities might look like if even a fraction of that money had been invested differently.
Okay, I like where this is going. Paint me a picture.
Imagine a town struggling with crumbling roads and bridges, where public transportation is unreliable, overcrowded. Now imagine a portion of that enormous military budget being redirected to address those issues.
Okay.
Suddenly, smoother commutes, safer bridges, and a more efficient, accessible public transit system.
Yeah.
That's a tangible improvement in the quality of life for everyone in that community.
Right. And it's not just about convenience. Safer roads and bridges mean fewer accidents.
Right.
And better public transportation can reduce traffic congestion and air pollution.
Absolutely.
Those are real benefits that directly impact people's health and well-being.
Exactly. And let's not forget about the economic ripple
Oh,
effects.
yeah.
Investing in infrastructure, it creates jobs.
Right.
You need construction workers, engineers, material suppliers. All of these are local jobs that contribute to the economic vitality of the community.
It's like a virtuous cycle. You invest in infrastructure, which improves the quality of life, creates jobs, and boosts the local economy. This
Exactly.
win-win situation.
Now let's shift our focus to education.
Okay.
What if instead of pouring billions into weapon systems, we invested a significant portion of that money in our schools?
Oh, I can already imagine the possibilities. Smaller class sizes, better equipped classrooms, more resources for teachers to support students with diverse learning needs. It would be transformative.
It's about providing children with the tools they need to succeed, not just in school, but in life. And a well-educated workforce is essential for a thriving economy. It's all interconnected.
This is making me realize that when we talk about military spending, we're not just talking about abstract numbers in a budget. We're talking about choices. Choices that have very real consequences for our communities.
Precisely. And those consequences are often felt most acutely at the local level. Think about the needs in your own community.
Okay.
Are there schools that are struggling to provide a quality education? Are there infrastructure projects that have been put on hold due to lack of funding? Are there healthcare facilities that are overwhelmed and understaffed?
These are the questions we need to be asking ourselves. If we're funneling vast resources into the military, are we neglecting other critical areas that directly impact the well-being of our communities?
It's a crucial question, and it's not about being anti-military. It's about recognizing that every dollar spent on the military is a dollar that cannot be spent on something else.
Right.
It's about making informed choices and setting priorities that reflect the needs of our communities.
Yeah, I'm starting to see how this ties into the idea of thinking and acting locally. It's about recognizing that even though we're talking about national budgets and military spending, the power to shift those priorities ultimately lies with us, the citizens.
That's powerful insight. We often feel powerless in the face of these massive systems, but the reality is that we have more agency than we realize. And it starts with asking those critical questions, understanding the trade-offs, and advocating for change at the local level.
So it's not just about voting in national elections every few years. It's about engaging in our communities, holding our elected officials accountable, and making our voices heard.
Exactly. It's about being informed, engaged citizens who understand the connections between national policies and their local impacts. And it's about demanding that our resources be used wisely and responsibly to benefit the communities we live in.
This conversation has been incredibly eye-opening. I'm starting to see how seemingly distant decisions about military spending can have a profound impact on our everyday lives. And it's inspiring to think that we can actually do something about it.
We absolutely can. And that's what we'll explore further in the final part of our deep dive. We'll delve into some concrete actions we can take to shift priorities and advocate for change at the local level.
You know, it can feel overwhelming to think about tackling these massive systems like military spending.
It's true. Yeah, these budgets and these policies often seem so far removed from our daily lives.
Right.
But remember, real change, it starts locally.
So you're saying that even though we're talking about national budgets and military spending, we can actually make a difference right here in our own communities.
Absolutely. We tend to, you know, think of ourselves just as voters,
right,
casting a ballot every few years.
Yeah.
But we're also consumers, investors, and active participants in our local economies.
So you're saying we should be more mindful of where we spend our money, support local businesses that are aligned with our values.
Exactly. Every dollar we spend is a vote for the kind of world we want to live in.
I like that.
And beyond our spending habits, we can get involved in local politics. Attend town hall meetings, you know, write to our representatives, advocate for policies that prioritize community needs over military expansion.
It's about reclaiming our power as citizens and holding our elected officials accountable, making sure they're representing our interests, not just the interests of the military-industrial complex.
Right. It's also about having those critical conversations.
With our friends and family.
Yeah, with our friends, families, and neighbors, raising awareness about the true cost of militarization and the potential benefits of investing in our communities.
It's about changing the narrative.
Right.
Right. Moving away from this idea that military spending is the only way to ensure security and prosperity.
Because true security, it comes from strong communities.
Right.
A healthy environment.
Yeah.
And an educated populace.
Yeah.
Not just from weapons and military bases.
I love that. It's a much more holistic view of security.
Yeah.
One that recognizes the interconnectedness of our lives and our communities.
And it's a view that empowers us to act, to make a difference right where we are.
Yeah.
So I'll leave you with this final thought. What would it look like for your community to truly prioritize its own needs?
Yeah.
What kind of future could we build if we shifted our focus, even slightly, from military might to community well-being?
That's a powerful question to consider, a call to action for each of us. And remember, listeners, this is just the tip of the iceberg. If you want to delve deeper into this topic, I highly recommend checking out Tom Woods' work. You can find his ebook, The Pentagon Versus the Economy, for free at tomsfreebooks.com.
It's a thought-provoking read that will challenge your assumptions and hopefully inspire you to think and act locally. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.